This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Australia's number one award-winning show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self.
Hide and seek.
Visit joy.org.au/hide and seek.
Hide and seek.
Joy 94.9.
That's right, this is your program for exploring sex, sexuality and self. Hide and seek here on Joy 94.9. Tim, as we said at the top of the show, domestic violence, family violence, relationship violence is in the news a lot at the moment.
Yes, that's right.
And so we thought we'd have a bit of an in-depth discussion about it. And joining us tonight is Anthony from the VAC. Good evening, Anthony.
Hi. Hi, guys.
Now, what's your role at the VAC?
I'm a counsellor there as part of the counselling team, and I've also been involved in their relationship violence work, or specifically their men's behaviour change program. So co-facilitating the group that the VAC provides to men in gay or bisexual relationships who want to work on their use of violence.
Yeah. And so, as I mentioned one stat at the top of the show, so essentially 33% of LGBTI Australians have reported having been in a relationship where the partner was abusive.
Yeah.
Another Victorian study is, again, one third, with most of that being psychological abuse.
Yes.
And we know that trans people experience significantly higher levels of emotional and sexual or physical abuse from partners or ex-partners. And most of those studies, trans studies are from overseas.
Yeah, right.
From your point of view, are those figures about right?
Look, all the studies that we use to help inform our work do suggest, even internationally, that violence in same-sex relationships and trans relationships occurs at similar rates as it compared to heterosexual relationships.
Yep.
So I guess, you know, does that reflect what we see at the VAC, you know, I guess in terms of family violence presentations? It doesn't, because we don't get a lot of people coming in for family violence work unless they sort of come through our service. So we sometimes we offer couples counselling, so there might be an indication at the assessment stage when they request couples counselling, and then we're sort of screening for safety in those assessments, and it might be at that point we might sort of educate the couple a little bit, and we might do some individual work and use, I guess, language around family violence to help to, I guess, educate them about the nature of power and control in their relationship. So I guess we don't get a lot of people coming in the door.
Yeah.
And that's for a number of reasons. I mean, I know we're going to go into a little bit of that, but there are lots of reasons why gay or bisexual men or even lesbian women don't necessarily come to a service to address their family violence.
So if you do screen these people and you detect something there, is it your responsibility to report?
Yeah, good question. I guess it's a good question, because we have, I guess, some ethical issues if we are hearing about a criminal offence, which
sure.
would be physical abuse or sexual abuse. Even threats to life and property damage are considered crimes. They're listed in the Crimes Act. And we wouldn't be so quick to race off to the police to report the abuse. We would work with the couple in a fairly safe way. We wouldn't do that work with both of them in the room. We would work separately with them. But I guess the person who was using the violence, we would work with them to try and firstly support them to stop using violence. And then if they weren't able to do so, we would need to make decisions about what do we do with that information to make sure that their partner was safe.
Sure.
So what are some of the signs, I guess, of violence?
Oh, God, that's a good question too, because, you know, they can be so subtle. And I think that some people that I have assessed who have disclosed all sorts of behaviours in their relationship don't often identify themselves as being in a family violence situation.
Yep.
And I think largely because our community, the GLBTI community, I'm not sure we have a language for family violence just yet, or relationship violence. I guess we're using the word relationship violence because we are trying to create an inclusive language so that we can sort of say, hey, this happens in our relationships as well. But often they, I think the experiences I've had with running groups as well is that some men feel, or some people in our community feel, that family violence is a heterosexual issue. It doesn't happen in gay or bisexual relationships.
Is that why you've gone with a different term rather than domestic violence?
Yeah, definitely. Family violence, I thought the mainstream sector was using the word family for it to sound more inclusive, and for also for it to indicate just who else is affected by the violence, because there's grandparents and there's children and extended family members. But I guess at the VAC, we were really trying to come up with a term that our clients would be able to say, actually, yes, I relate to that. And we just felt that domestic and family were words that might sort of exclude them, and relationship was more, I guess, broad and, I guess, more inclusive.
Now, Tim, we've come across a bit of a checklist about relationships and violence. Do you want to start running through a few of those?
Sure. And, look, I was very surprised by some of these because I've looked at some of these in my own circumstances and thought, I never thought that was domestic violence or family violence.
Right.
So, for example, make it difficult or prevent you from seeing friends or family, control your money against your will, threaten you with violence or hit, kick or throw things at you, threaten to out you to your family or colleagues. Now, that seems to have been touched on quite a bit.
Yeah, that one's very specific to the GLBTI community.
Mm.
I guess that's a form of violence that you won't see in a heterosexual relationship. No one ever threatens to out you as heterosexual.
Yeah.
So I guess that's one very specific one, yeah.
And then in response to some of those things, do you change your behavior or your appearance so your partner doesn't get angry or feel scared, anxious, or like you're walking on eggshells, which does happen in many relationships?
Yeah, look, I guess there can be examples in all relationships where perhaps some of these behaviours might occur, or some sort of examples of abuse, like verbal abuse, like screaming and yelling and swearing at each other. These are things might potentially, you know, commonly happen in relationships when there's tension. I think the difference is when we talk about family violence or relationship violence, we're really looking at the experience of the person who's been subjected to those behaviours. And if there's a sense of feeling intimidated, feeling sort of controlled, feeling apprehensive or feeling coerced in any way, you know, the capacity that you can't move about openly and freely in your relationship, if those kind of things are occurring, then we would probably need to have a look at that. We might be talking about abuse, yeah.
Sure.
Apart from the ones we've just read out, are there other ones that you can think of that potentially have been raised by people you've been talking to that is fairly common?
I think that one of the common referral pathways is generally through criminal offences.
Right.
I think because they're maybe a bit more sort of clear-cut in the eyes of the law. So being assaulted and being sort of bullied or kind of overtly sort of threatened, is sort of threats to life.
Right.
And I guess the other forms of violence that aren't so clear-cut that are things like emotional abuse, so, and things like social abuse. I mean, in that list you mentioned something about making it difficult to invite people over.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, if your partner behaves in an abusive and controlling way and really doesn't want you to have too many friends or contact with the outside world, they might, in fact, behave in ways that make it really difficult for you to have friends over. And I guess that can seem like a very subtle form of social control.
Yeah, it makes you feel quite isolated, presumably.
Yeah.
We will get into this more very shortly, but when, as you said before, the groups you work with are generally those that, do we say perpetrate?
Yes.
Perpetrate violence.
Yes.
What are some of the key reasons they say that it happens?
We aren't always so heavily attached to their explanations for why the violence is happening. I guess our main sort of philosophy is that violence isn't okay and it needs to stop.
Yep, sure.
And that we look at sort of ways to help them to stop that violence. and to minimize the sense of power that they feel that they're entitled to. But they do, I mean, talking about why the violence occurs is part of their narrative and part of their process to get the story out.
Mm.
And I think largely, in my experience anyway, in running mainstream groups and the group at the VAC, is that a lot of the guys use words like, I just lost control, or, you know, they pushed my buttons. So there's this sense of feeling sort of disempowered, or the inability to sort of regulate your own reaction or your feeling, yeah. Feeling like you're overcome with this sort of enormous sense of anger or whatever it is. And I guess that could be largely true, but one of the things we really try to bring home in the group is that they actually do have a choice. Because even though they may experience anger from time to time, or feel sort of disappointed or let down by their partner, whatever it is, they're not always using violence. But there are some instances where they're choosing to use violence. So we sort of try and unpack that a little bit and understand that within the context of the relationship.
Hi, this is Dan Savage, and you're listening to Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9.
You are on Joy 94.9, Hide and Seek, your program for exploring sex, sexuality, and self. Andrew and Tim are with you tonight, and we are chatting with Anthony about relationship violence. Now, if you need to get in contact with someone after, you know, if this is discussion is raising issues, then the VAC Counselling Service will be open tomorrow morning. If you're in Melbourne, 98656700, or outside of Melbourne, 1-800-134-840. If you're elsewhere in Australia, we suggest contacting QLife, 1-800-184-527, or also, I guess, your local HIV counselling services like ACON, Healthy Communities up in Quack, organisations like that.
If you're concerned about your immediate safety, then you can always call 000.
Yep. So, Anthony, we talked a little bit about, you know, some of the signs of what relationship violence is. We started to get into a little bit about what happens during groups. So can you talk us a little bit through about a group that you would run?
The Men's Behaviour Change Program is an accredited group which is, I guess, runs in accordance with the minimum standards and quality practice methods that are set by NOTA Violence, or NTV, the governing body that oversee the runnings of these programs here in Victoria and Australia. And so they kind of set the curriculum, and there are certain themes that we're expected to cover
right.
in this program. And they include things like some basic education around what actually is family violence or relationship violence. There is various models that we use in the group to understand patterns of violence and how they occurred, how power and control in relationships is maintained in what we call the cycle of violence. That model has largely come from heterosexual relationships, and we don't necessarily have something specific that's come from sort of studying and more thoroughly understanding same-sex relationships. But we've found in the group at the VAC that these models still apply, or we can sort of tweak them to make them more inclusive.
You said before in passing that you'd run both groups for both heterosexual men and also gay men. Is it that the same issues and discussions are happening for both? Is the sort of themes very much similar?
Pretty much, yeah, pretty much. We understand that power and control is what sort of motivates, kind of having sort of prioritising your own needs over your partner's, really, and sort of imposing, I guess, your own needs and interests over your partner's is something that's sort of common amongst this heterosexual relationships and the same-sex relationships. But I guess the concept of patriarchy and sort of male privilege kind of also underpins our understanding of how the context of violence occurring in heterosexual relationships. And those kind of ideas don't sort of neatly fit with same-sex relationships,
yeah.
Because, you know, when we're talking about two men and we think about the idea of male privilege, well, one of the males is not going to feel too privileged. So,
exactly.
So we kind of have to sort of sometimes re-examine whether or not these concepts are suitable for the men we work with.
And I guess as well, some of these would take a while to be reported. And part of that is the stigma that men can look after themselves. They should be tough.
Yeah, I think that's the ideas that we have about masculinity. And I think I read somewhere recently in a piece of literature that for gay and bisexual men, because homosexuality isn't always attached to this kind of idea that we have of being masculine. So gay men are sometimes grouped with things that we consider feminine, which I think can be quite damaging to gay men. That some gay men strive for try to sort of cling to notions of masculinity by exerting even sort of overcompensating and sort of exerting more power and strength in their relationships, and sometimes can go on to actually be abusive or use abusive behavior. So yeah, there is the idea of not coming forward because you're a wimp, you know, and this idea of being a victim. You know, there's something very passive about that, and sometimes we associate passivity with femininity. So there are some, you know, gender theory, I guess, does help us to understand some of the barriers to seeking support for men.
And I guess friends and family as well, there's still that stigma there.
Yeah, if gay relationships aren't supported and celebrated and nurtured within sort of family and extended family contexts, the way heterosexual relationships can be, I guess, you know, and there are some issues in the relationship and violence is occurring, then it would make it less likely you don't have as many resources or people to talk to, or, and if you're not out, I guess that's another sort of barrier, because then there's you're grappling with trying to protect your privacy and your anonymity around your sexuality, but sort of feeling trapped in an abusive relationship.
And we've spoken a lot about abusive relationships, but there's also the abuse that goes on when perhaps someone comes out as being gay to their family.
Yeah, I think.
Do you come across that much in your work?
Most of the work we do is around intimate partner violence.
Yeah.
In terms of experiencing homophobic violence from family members or kind of members of the people in the community, I think that's common. I think it was the Private Lives Report from Gay and Lesbian Health Victoria that found that about 80% of people who identified as GLBTI experienced some form of abuse outside in the community. And if we are experiencing family violence at similar rates, even within our relationships in our own homes, then we're kind of, you know, there's this kind of double whammy for same-sex attracted people where you're just as likely to experience violence inside and outside of the home.
Definitely.
And some of that's interlinked in what we were just saying is that for somebody potentially who's grown up having verbal abuse or over time, if they go into a relationship and that continues, I guess for some, it might be sort of a normal situation.
Yeah, I've heard that. I have. That's common to hear that from some men who have come through and said, you know, I didn't realize this was violence.
Yeah.
You know, this is the way we talk in a relationship, and this is, you know, I was brought up with this stuff. You know, my family, my parents swore at me all the time, and it was water off a duck's back. So, I hear that a lot. Actually, it's quite common. Yeah.
We should also, there's some great myths around domestic violence and relationship violence that we've found, and one in particular in regards to the LGBTI community is about the BDSM.
Yes.
BDSM is not the same as violence.
It's not. BDSM is now I hope I'm getting the words using the words relevantly, but it's kind of like a fetish, right? Or it's it's kind of like, you know, you can role play, you can do all sorts of things. It's within a context of consent, and I think that's the sort of most important thing to consider when we're looking at BDSM. And if people like to, you know, a little bit of a spanking or a whip or whatever tickles your fancy, you know, the fact that they're both at consenting adults really makes it their own private business, and I would we don't consider that family violence. I guess if the behavior is occurring and the other or one of the parties, particularly the one who's being subjected to a whip or whatever, if they're not consenting, then we would consider that abusive.
A couple of the other myths: stress does not necessarily does not cause violence.
Yes, stress, alcohol. I'm going to be a bit controversial as well and say ICE, because I know that everyone talks about ICE and violence, but these things we wouldn't necessarily consider to cause violence, because if stress caused violence, that would mean any time I got stressed, I'd be using violence, and the same goes for anybody else.
Yeah.
And with the guys I work with in the group, that does come up a lot, particularly around alcohol and drugs. And we asked them for examples where they were drunk or on ice and didn't use violence, and they always come up with more examples where they had not used violence. So we're really looking at, you know, the fact that they are making some choices, and perhaps being intoxicated or on ice or whatever makes it more difficult for them to sort of regulate their emotions or their reactions, and they might give themselves permission to behave violently when they're under the influence more than they would when they're sober. There is still an element of choice there.
Sure.
Joy 94.9.
You're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9 in your program for exploring sex, sexuality and self. Andrew and Tim chatting with Anthony about relationship violence. Tim, what you had a query.
I did. So what about exit strategies? So if someone wants to leave an abusive relationship, do you guys have recommendations that they should follow?
Yeah, I guess the exit strategy, I guess, is also sometimes known as a safety plan. And I guess the safety plan is a very specific set of steps that someone who is concerned about their safety, and that can be used whether you're staying in the relationship or if you're making plans to leave. And that's just to ensure that you have, if you do need to take very immediate steps to leave the house or leave the relationship very quickly, and you don't have time to sort of pack your things and gather your items, that you have some things already packed in a bag somewhere at another location that you can access in, you know, where you don't have to sort of worry. So things like appropriate documentation like ID, you know, passports, copies of, I mean, I worked with the guy who photocopied and scanned copies of all his sort of main forms of documentation and emailed them to himself, so he had them online. You know, I guess for people with children, they might want to sort of pack a bag of kids' toys and clothing and that sort of thing. You know, having a spare key for the car perhaps somewhere. If sometimes, you know, if you're having an argument with your partner and they have, you know, they grab your keys off you so that you can't drive off, just having a spare set somewhere else, maybe with a friend. So the safety plan, I mean, I guess if someone was thinking about putting together a safety plan, they could contact the VAC and have the support of a counsellor to help them sort of construct one. But yeah, it's really just to sort of increase the individual sense of safety.
Now, one thing I've heard a bit is also, obviously, in today's day and age, our digital footprints are something that is also an area where a partner could impede upon. Are there some key things there that you guys suggest?
This is an area that is kind of just developing.
It is very new for me.
But I guess just being mindful of kind of who has your password and who has access to your accounts and those sorts of things is really important and to be mindful of.
And I know that I've said, and this is from mainstream services, I've heard this, there are certainly certain programs you can get to make sure that you're not being tracked and all those sort of things which can occur. So.
And monitoring your partner with either devices in the car or I know recently I worked with a young woman actually whose partner moved out, and she found cameras in various locations in the home. So that was quite scary, really, like form of social abuse to keep your partner under surveillance. So you know, it is a sort of new area, and I guess people who wanting to use violence against their partners will find more sophisticated ways of doing so.
You know, as simple as turning off your location services on your phone. Because, you know, Facebook just updated the last 24 hours. It's now doing location services. Yes. So, you know, turn those off.
Yeah, it is. And it can be hard too when people are so attached to their virtual identity and having, you know, social networks and people they interact with online. I guess it can be a difficult thing to sort of turn it off. But I guess, you know, if your safety's on the line.
Yeah. Now we've also seen, I suppose, recently some fairly big announcements around family violence. Federal government's $100 million in the last week for family violence. Which I think includes just what we're talking about, there's some digital strategies there. So you know, if you want to find out, you know, have a look around. But are mainstream services coped to deal with LGBTI people?
The mainstream sector is largely set up to respond to male perpetrated violence against women and children.
Yep.
So there's, and there are very good reasons for that, I guess. There are, you know, the overwhelming proportion of victims of family violence are women and children. So so the sector is sort of better positioned for that. I think they're not so well situated to provide adequate services and inclusive services for the GLBTI community. And I'm hoping that with the recent Royal Commission into Family Violence, and I'm eagerly waiting to see what some of the recommendations are when the report is released. I think it's in January or February next year or March.
It's probably, it's just not that far away.
So hopefully there is some funding that's going to be directed to specialised services for GLBTI people. But at this stage, the only specialised service for gay and bisexual men who are using violence is at the Victorian AIDS Council. Yeah.
And as we said, there was the Royal Commission into Violence here in Victoria. GLHV put in a submission, I believe, and VAC was involved in another submission as well. And they're both, I guess, saying, you know, there needs to be a lot more education, and you know, programs like this tonight are critical to raising awareness.
I agree, and community education is a really big, really big beginning. I think that, you know, I guess the same sort of effort went into raising awareness around sexual health, around sort of informing the community and educating the community in ways that was accessible to the community. And I think we need to start thinking, being more, I guess, creative in how we reach the GLBTI community to also provide information and support to people who are experiencing violence.
So for somebody who is experiencing violence, When they ring the VSA, what do they expect?
Well, they'll speak to the counselling services intake worker, who will ask just some basic questions around contact details, and also just a brief summary of what the needs are, what sort of services they're wanting. And if they do report that there is an issue in their relationship and violence has occurred, then they'll be referred off to the counsellors who are qualified and skilled to respond to violence in relationships, in same-sex relationships.
And as we said, immediate support.
Immediate support, they can call 000. You can speak to also the court registrar down at the closest magistrate's court if you are thinking about an intervention order. That's another way to increase your sense of safety, intervention orders.
Yeah, so an AVO.
Yep. AVO, or, you know, IVO here in Victoria. And I guess there is a applicant support worker at every magistrate's court in Victoria who can talk you through the process and who can sort of together with you determine whether or not your risk is high or low, or and how an order, how a intervention order can help. And for people who are, I'd also like to appeal to the guy who might be using violence in his relationship, who would find it incredibly difficult to attract this kind of sense, attention to himself and to his relationship. But the violence can stop, and we can offer really effective support for him to stop his violence. And if he was to call the Victorian AIDS Council, he could expect a respectful, non-judgmental and ethical service to support him improve things in terms of how he behaves in his relationship.
VAC's number is 9865 6700, or outside of Melbourne 1800 134 840, or QLife is another contact for right across the nation, 1800 184 527. Should also mention Victoria Police. What are we calling now? Diversity officers?
Gay and lesbian liaison officers.
They are still gay and lesbian liaison officers. That's great. So they're another, of course, good people to chat to.
Yep.
Anthony, thank you so much for coming in and chatting about this tonight.
No
much
problem.
Appreciated.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
And Tim, that's about all we've got time for tonight.
It's been a very interesting show
it
tonight.
Has been.
I've learnt a lot, actually.
Yes. So, yeah. Get in touch or go online, do some research if you're feeling like you need to. And yes, all the best of luck. This is Hide and Seek. Good night.
Good night.
You can subscribe to Hide and Seek's podcast for free. Visit joy.org.au/hideandseek for more information. Suggest a topic, a guest, or provide feedback. Email hideandseek@joy.org.au. Hide and Seek is presented by Andrew the Apprentice, James Findlay and Avi Miller. Post-production by David Cheshire.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.